Okay. So why did you decide to stand?
Well, as many of your listeners will maybe know, I was the candidate in 2015 for Bradford West, and it was an interesting campaign shaping up to be again. But yeah, when the Prime Minister called the snap election, I thought this would be a great opportunity to try and build on what I think was, you know, the success that we had in the last campaign.
Do you consider yourself to be local?
Yeah, yeah. So I'd certainly consider myself a Yorkshireman, as all your listeners can tell from my thick Yorkshire accent. So for those who don't know, my background is I was born in Harrogate, brought up, as I say, in Yorkshire, and now working with my father just outside Wetherby. Our family business was the Black Dyke Mills in Queensbury for the best part of 150 years. So John Foster was my great-great-great-great-grandfather. And, still take my grandmother to go and listen to the Black Dyke Band from time to time. She's 96 now, though, so it's a bit more difficult than it used to be.
What do you think is the most important issue facing the constituency?
Oh, it's got to be the economy. Education is absolutely an issue that is well documented, that is, you know, Bradford struggles with the education. But the economy comes above everything else, because without the money to pay for the public services on which we all depend, the rest is really a moot point.
What do you consider to be the most important policy?
Sorry, the most important policy that the government is proposing, or that I would like to see, or I don't...
What you'd like to see?
I think that equality actually is a huge issue for me as a Conservative. And, you know, the big thing, my philosophy really as a Conservative is not helping people, it's helping people help themselves. And so I think that the policies that the Conservative government has committed to around increasing the minimum wage, obviously it's gone up from £5.85 under the last Labour government, it's now £7.50 an hour, going up to £8.75 over the course of the next Parliament if we're elected again, increasing the tax-free allowance, it's 11,500 now, there's already 4 million people have been taken out of tax altogether and 30 million who've had a significant tax cut, and increasing that to £12,500. Those are things that I think really matter, and I think certainly for people in Bradford, where, you know, the average income is it's not that much lower than the Yorkshire average, but it is lower, that this is something that can really tangibly help.
Why do you think you'd be the best person to represent the constituency?
Because I think that I understand and am committed to economic development in a way that, you know, Labour talks a good game on the economy, but that really is all they do. I mean, unemployment has ended higher than when it began under every single Labour government in history. And I think that we are in a situation now where the economy is growing. It's grown, it's been the fastest growing economy in the developed world for the last 3 years. Unemployment in Bradford now, there's only just over 9,000 people claiming unemployment benefit, which has halved since 2014. I mean, these are really encouraging. And I think the other thing I'd say about personally is that, you know, nothing can be taken for granted in this election. But I think all the evidence does point to a fairly decisive Conservative victory on the 8th of June. And if Theresa May and the Conservatives are returned to government, having a Conservative voice for Bradford is much more likely to be listened to than another opposition bench, you know, backbench MP who's making a lot of speeches, but really unable to have tangible influence on a Conservative government, whereas obviously a Conservative MP can and will do that.
Why did Theresa May call the election now?
So, look, she obviously wants to increase her majority. That is no secret. So the question is, well, why? And I think I do genuinely believe that the issue of having a majority of 12, you know, it doesn't matter whilst Labour are such a shambles and a ramshackle band. I mean, you know, they couldn't run a bath, let alone the country at the moment. But, you know, as and when, if and when that changes, and when the Brexit negotiations do get tough, you know, that small majority can evaporate very quickly. And I think that having a situation where you are beholden, not just actually to demands from opposition MPs, but also from your own side, maybe, you know, what people would consider the you know, the right Brexit rice of the Conservative Party, the Prime Minister needs the freedom to be able to navigate through what is unquestionably the most important negotiation since the Second World War. And she's looked at the electoral landscape and thought, this is the time. And of course, the other thing to say is that under the old timetable, we would have been gearing up to an election, general election, you know, in 2018-19 for 2020, which is exactly the time that the Brexit negotiations come to a head. And that would have been a very, very awkward balance. And I think very dangerous, actually, to have, you know, the government distracted in that way. So I think she was right to call the general election. I'm not going to lie, it came as a bit of a shock. You know, strap your armour on and ride back into battle. But I'm really pleased to be here.
Mm-hmm. Well, given that it is widely acknowledged that it is impossible to get the trade deals and legislation sorted within that two-year period since triggering Article 50, and it is expected that there will be a one-year extension that will be applied for, it would mean that that would come to fruition just as the election period was about to start in 2020, which would mean that that's when the pound is most likely to be in flux, where the banks are most likely to be under the old timetable. So is this electoral opportunism by Theresa May to not risk having financial disruption on top of a general election?
Well, I think trying to minimise financial disruption is the very opposite of electoral opportunism. That is absolutely sensible and the right thing to do, which is what I was saying in my last answer.
Okay, Bradford West has consistently been demonstrated to have poor indicators for poverty and housing. Michael Fallon has announced there will be money, not new money, but part of the £1.4 billion capital spending announced in the autumn statement, available for councils and housing associations to build new homes. Mm-hmm. How do you envisage this announcement benefiting Bradford West?
Well, as you say, we do have a high proportion of people in council homes in Bradford West. I think the opportunity, housing is the big issue. It's one of the biggest, really, because such a large proportion of people's disposable income goes on rent and not being able to afford other things as a consequence. And being able to get on the housing ladder so that you have that security in later life, and obviously massively reduce the amount that you have to spend on rent and other things, is, you know, it's fundamental, really, I think, to a fairer society. I think the government is absolutely right in trying to increase home ownership, both amongst council house tenants, but also through building more homes and including affordable homes. So I would very much hope, and I would certainly fight to see as much of that coming to Bradford as possible. And as I say, again, that's the thing where if you're a Conservative MP with a Conservative government, your voice is just going to be heard that bit more clearly.
Now, the amount of money that would exactly be used for this hasn't been said to be part of the £1.4 billion. So we don't actually know how much money would actually be allocated towards this or the number of houses that would be built. But it's also said that they'll be sold off within 10 to 15 years after being built. It's vague on the detail. Is this just a knee-jerk reaction to Labour's announcement that they would build 500,000 social housing homes?
No, I don't think so. I think the government has been committed to increasing the housing supply and getting people on the housing ladder for a long time. And that is very well known. I mean, it's no secret that the Conservative Party is committed to increasing home ownership at all levels of demographic in this country.
Now, given that the house will be sold off after 10 to 15 years, if the tenant cannot afford to buy the property, then it's either going to go to a private landlord who could make them homeless or hike their rent really high, or sold off to somebody else and the tenant ends up homeless. How would you protect the tenant under all that? Where do they go?
Well, I mean, there are rules around landlords being, you know, preventing them from abusing their position in that way. As I say, it's quite a hypothetical question. I can't claim to have, you know, have the answer on exactly what would happen in individual cases. I'm not, as you say, the policy is, you know, I would say germane at this stage. I would have to wait. You know, I'm a parliamentary candidate. I'm not in the government. I'd have to wait to see more detail.
But surely it's not going to solve the affordable rental property market, because it's all ending up in private hands in the long term, isn't it?
Well, private hands can mean a lot of different things. I mean, private hand can mean the people who actually are living in the properties. And, you know, rent in Bradford is actually disproportionately high in the region and the country when you compare it to the level of you know, average incomes. And as I say, you know, this is not a policy that has been completely fleshed out at this stage. So what I'm not going to do is a Diane Abbott and try and fluff my way through. I mean, it's not my policy for a start. That's the first thing to say. But, you know, try and fluff my way through by speculating, because I can't. I'm not in the business of doing that.
Given that this what Mike Fallon has announced as a policy will involve compulsory purchase of land, he wants to make it easier for that to happen in order for these properties to be built. Are we not just seeing a scenario where land can be purchased and put into private ownership in the short term?
Well, as I've just said to you, Anne, I'm not going to do a Diane Abbott. I'm not in the business of speculating on something about which, at this stage, I am not wholly familiar. So, you know, you can ask me all you like, but that's all I've got to say.
So he also said that deals would depend on individual areas, that there'd be individual deals, not a standard deal throughout. So how would areas like Bradford ensure they got a good deal as compared to, say, Surrey getting a sweetheart deal?
I have to say the same thing again, Anne. You know, this is not a policy on which I've seen that much of the detail, so I can't say how Bradford's going to get more or less than Surrey or any other part of the country. I mean, this is just purely speculative.
The EU divorce settlement is now estimated to be a possible €100 billion, approximately. That is approximately the equivalent 10 years membership of the EU. What do you think would be an acceptable cut to the people of Bradford to fund this divorce money?
Well, you're speaking of the divorce settlement as though that has been agreed. That is a figure that has been bandied about. You know, there's been figures that have been bandied about from 100 million to 60 billion to below 50 billion to nothing at all. I mean, the technical legal obligation for the UK would not be, they don't technically have to pay a penny. Now, that probably would not be the right thing to do. That's my personal opinion. I think we probably do need to honour those obligations. This will be part of the negotiation, exactly how big that settlement is.
Okay. Done and dusted.